My guest in the studio began at the Mocambo and El Rocco Jazz Cellars in the 1950s. As a jazz musician, he's played in many parts of the world, including Ronnie Scott's in London, two tours of Russian jazz festivals throughout Southeast Asia, India, the former Soviet bloc countries, Europe, Canada, the US. As a band leader, John has accepted several awards for 10-part invention, three MO Awards, as well as the Australian Music Foundation Award and Australian Music Centre Award. He accepted an ARIA Award for The Last Straw's self-titled CD in 1990, and also in the same year accepted first prize for the best band at the Leningrad International Jazz Festival. He won the Australian Jazz Critics Awards for drums in 1990 and 1992, and was elected to the Montsalvat Jazz Festival Roll of Honour along with James Morrison in 1996. He's performed with many international jazz luminaries, including legendary saxophonists Lee Konitz, Dewey Redman, and the master of the soprano saxophone, the late Steve Lacy. John Pochet, welcome to Now's the Time.
Hi, Frank. Nice to be here.
Back in Adelaide in 1986, did you ever dream that 10-part invention would be still performing today and becoming such an important and vital band in the Australian jazz scene?
Well, I guess not, because I guess I wasn't looking that far into the future, and I was just finally so happy to have my dream realised where I got the thing together. It was something that I'd wanted to do since the early 60s, and it was something I always mentioned to people. Peter Ignefsky from SEMA, he was a good friend, and I'd often talked about it with him, and he met Anthony Steele, who was running the Adelaide Festival that year, and he was looking for a new concept in the jazz part of the festival, so he got us together and suggested that he listen to my concept, which I had a chat to Anthony, and then we put the whole jazz program together, and we played there in a variety of small groups, and then in the end, the last 3 days, we came together as 10-part invention and made our world premiere. Roger Frampton came up with the name. I was actually off going to the States, and I said, when I come back, we have to think of a name for the band. We get some really wild things, you know, 10-part convention, and we went to Cairns once, and there was a big bus there and a guy holding a sign saying, Ansett welcomes 10-par convention, you know. I think he thought we were a golf club, you know.
That's nothing. Over at Manly at the festival one year, I think it must have been the early 1990s, one of the volunteers over there announced the Clarion Fracture Zone band as Carlton Fractured Zone. Tell us about the feeling in the band following the premature death of Roger Frampton. He was such a respected and loved member of the group. Was it a challenge to keep the band together?
It was such an emotional time. I mean, Roger had been coming to Sydney, and I know he always stayed with me because he was living in Wollongong at that time and doing some teaching down there, and I noticed there was something strange about him, you know, and I said, go to the doctor. I thought he might have been suffering from depression or something, because finally he went to the doctor, had some tests and a CAT scan, and they gave him 3 months to live. So we were all quite shattered because we were going really well at that time. The band had just been to China and the Philippines and Taiwan, Singapore, and we were kind of on the crest of a wave, and we were just about to make a new album, so we were all quite shattered. But it actually made us determined to go on even more. We figured we had to do it for Roger, and we had to keep the band going for Roger and set it up with our original ideals. So Paul McNamara was very happy to come into the band, and he was a logical person and taught at the conservatory. He was a good friend of Roger's, and had a great knowledge, which we really needed there on the keyboard. So he came into the band, and we did our last album, Unidentified Spaces, and we had a bit of a break after that for a few months. I had a bit of a problem with my health, and I wasn't too well for about 6 months, and we let it go for about 6 months, and then I got back to everyone and said, right, everyone want to go on, does everyone? And everyone was so keen. And the only one that didn't really, for health reasons, was Bernie McGann, because he's been, Bernie's, he's, well, we're all getting a little older, but he's a little older than me, and he's been having a few heart murmurs and stuff like that, and also eyesight problems with all the music. I mean, the rest of us, we'd sort of made a living through the years by doing a lot of reading that side of the things, whereas Bernie had always been a jazz player, and he could read and everything, but it was, never came easy to him. He would get the stuff and look at it, and then he'd come in and play it, it'd be fine, but we were all used to just reading anything off. So I think when... I know how you felt, because my eyes are getting shocking now. I've got to wear my glasses, which is a real nuisance when you're playing the drums. But so Roger said, look, I might step aside and let one of the younger guys step in. So Andrew Robson, Bernie and Ten Part Invention, we'd always been the inspiration for him when he'd come up through the Canberra School of Music. So he was delighted to come into the band, and we were delighted to have him.
Wind Over the Lake. Anything topical about this particular track, John?
Not topical, but that's something to do with the I Ching. There was actually a poem that went with that that somehow got lost when they were putting that cover there together. But we play that quite a bit. I think it's a beautiful piece.
The lineup for Ten Part Invention. It's changed probably only two chairs for the first 15 years of its existence. What do you think makes the band so compelling for its musicians to be committed for that period of time? Why?
We were just so lucky with that band. I picked the people in it, and I didn't get all the original people that I asked, but I thought about it and asked. For instance, I didn't know Sandy Evans very well. I think I'd met her, that was about all. But I'd heard some of her music, and, I really liked that, and I liked where that was going. Some of the people, like Bob Birtles and Bernie, we'd all started off in the mid-50s. Roger Frampton and Mike Bukowski I met in the late 60s when they first came here. Ken James and Steve Elphick I'd met in the 70s. And then the others, James Greening was still at the Conservatorium, and Sandy just come out of there, and she'd had a band called Women and Children First, I think. And Warwick Alder was just out of the con. So they were sort of the young people in there. And we got together and went to Adelaide, and had to put in a great deal of work in a very short space of time. We were over there, we were rehearsing all day, and, people were running in with the ink still wet, and we were playing, and finally we ran out there. And we just got this tremendous feeling went through the band, and... It just worked. It was the younger players respected the older players, who respected the new things that they brought to the band, and I think it's just a stroke of luck that we just all fit together like a family without being cliquey in any way at all. I mean, we've had some wonderful players come and tour with us and fill in for other people and everything, and there's just nothing clicking there at all. It just is a group of people that really enjoy being together, and that's come into the music, and therefore with Miroslav's European influences, that's brought some other things into the music, and the travels around that we've all done. The composers in the band have managed to express that in a lot of the music, and it's just been great. So
each of the members are virtually leaders and soloists and virtuosos
right.
in their own right.
That's right.
And that even makes it more extraordinary to see that take place, because they've all got their own individual projects.
Well, they thought it wouldn't work. I remember when Eric Myers first review in the Australian, he said when we went over there to Adelaide, everyone went, what's going on, and what, all these people, they're all band leaders, like they're all going to have a terrible ego time. But that never came. There's no egos in the band. There's no egos in the band at all.
Last year's US tour was by all accounts an extremely successful one in terms of audiences and critics' praise. Were you surprised by such a positive reaction, and do you think the Americans were, say, equally surprised that the band of this calibre and composers and soloists actually existed in Australia?
Oh, definitely, yeah. I think, they think Australia's, in Europe or somewhere near Mars, a lot of people. I don't mean to be putting down American people who were just great, just wonderful. I mean, I've toured in America a lot. But I'd been to Chicago before. I'd played there with the Bernie McGann Trio, and people were just great there then. And I always knew if we got 10-part over there, they'd be really, really impressed. And they were impressed with the albums. I mean, that's why they invited us. And the critics, you know, they heard all the different things in the music, but I knew they would. I mean, if we could get it to Europe, I think the band would be a smash over there, but moving it around is very, very extremely difficult. What we went through to get the band to the States, I tell you, I wouldn't wish it on anyone. It took 18 months of very, very hard work, you know.
Yeah,
and a lot of expense. We had administrators working on it, two different administrators, it's very hard to get an unknown Australian band into a country like that. That's a very insular place, really, and I think most Americans figure that jazz is an American invention, which it is as far as I'm concerned, but it long ago became a world music. And that's not an international festival. They don't normally bring bands from anywhere else on that festival, but they make an exception every now and then. You know?
Was last year's tour spawned from your 97 tour with Bernie?
Well, it was really, yeah, from the connections I'd made. Yeah, I'd been sending them over stuff, and one of the guys that's actually on the committee is an Australian that's lived over there for about 35 years, and he comes back every year, and he has a friend here who sends him a lot of albums and everything, so he has a very good interest in Australian jazz. So I think they'll take another Australian band over there again, but they'll probably take someone from Melbourne next time, so here's some of the people there.
Now, the Five Bell Suite, written by trumpeter and flugel player Miroslav or Mike Bukowski.
Well, this is a multimedia project, and it originally put the concept together, and we were going to actually put this on about 5 years ago, but other things sort of stalled it a bit. But we originally got some funding from the Ministry for the Arts, and then I sought some assistance to get to commission Mike to write the music from the Australia Council, which we did, and then he finally put it together, what it will have is a narrator for the poem itself, with some very light improvisation behind it from the rhythm section.
The poet is Kenneth Slessor, is that correct?
No, Kenneth Slessor is the poet, yes. And we've got the distinguished actor Tony Barry, is doing the narration of the poem, and he's been working with us, and we've been putting in a lot of hard work on that. And there will be electronic music. There's two people will be added that Mike's been working for some time down at the Canberra School of Music that he's in charge of. He's been working on this. It's a suite in five movements. And I guess with the poem, it'll be 50 minutes to an hour, I think. And it's five pieces of music, and we'll actually play four of them, and then the poem with the improvisation will take about 5 to 10 minutes, and then we play the final piece in the suite. So there are visuals as well, because the poem, for those out there that are familiar with that poem, is about a bunch of guys who went out drinking on the Manly Ferry, and one fell overboard and drowned, and this is his friend sometime later reminiscing about him.
Right.
And that's what it's about. So there's a... that's a pretty depressing sort of scenario, you could say, but there's nothing depressing in the music or anything like that. But it sort of starts off with, like, harbour sounds, harbour scenes, sound effects, water lapping type things, you know, the fog horns. Bob Birtles is a very good fog horn, I've got to tell you.
On the baritone. Now, this is something very new for 10 Part. You wouldn't have worked with electronics before on computers.
No, we haven't, but we thought this would be something that may be of interest to festival directors, and not only jazz festival directors, arts festival directors. We'll just see what happens. We are performing it again in Wangaratta, but it will be a little different down there. We may just perform the music, but see if we get any interest from this festival where we do the thing in its entirety, to see if that's what happens. But we figured it might take us into a new kind of area for some project.
Now, there's another album in the pipeline, John, that's in the pocket. You've put it down. That'll make, what, the fourth 10-part invention album?
It will be the fourth album, yeah. The first one we did on ABC, and the second two came out on Rufus, and now the ABC are bringing this one out again. This is a piece of history. It's the final performance with 10-part invention of Roger Frampton at Wangaratta Live, which was a wonderful concert. And for anyone that was there that saw that concert, I mean, it had everything. I mean, it was so emotional. Everyone, he was dying. It was, and we could see, you could see, you know, that it was the last time he was going to play. But he got himself pumped up and he was all ready to go. And I started to tell a few stories about him, and then it just got funnier and funnier. And we were all, people were crying, and then we were crying laughing, and it was so emotional. But it brought out the best in the band. Of course, everybody wanted to play their hearts out for him, and we chose five of his compositions. We didn't tell him we were going to make a big deal of it or anything, and it was just a wonderful concert. Everyone had a ball. I mean, just the music's coming out, but there are a few stories on the stand at the actual event, which we all had a great laugh at that. But the band played so good, and they played these tunes of Roger's, and I think a couple of them we had recorded before. Sorry My English, that you played when I first came in, that's a live version, so it's a better version. The band's really pumped up. And there's a version of Jazznost on there, but there's three other compositions, Randomesque, The Dramatic Balladeer, and a long piece, Separate Reality, that Roger wrote, that we often used to finish concerts with. It sort of featured a lot of people in the band, and the performances of it were just wonderful. And as Jim McLeod always said when he played that concert, he said, it's, you know, it's an important part of jazz history, which I've finally impressed upon the people at the ABC, and they're now going to release it. They promised me that they will release it at Wangaratta while we're there.
It really is. For listeners that may not be aware, Roger Frampton actually passed away as a result of a brain tumour.
Brain tumour, yeah.
And it was a very, very sudden thing that I don't think anyone was really expecting. That I just can't remember the year now, John.
Well, it was 2000. Just 2000. The first, he made it just into 2000, you know, and then slipped away.
Looking at it from another perspective now, John, I mean, what's the next on the horizon for you? I mean, you're busy not only with 10-part invention. You've got the Space Cadets on the go. You've got Bernie's band on the go. You know, you're obviously very busy.
Well, not too busy, but I've just got little things coming up. You know, every week there's something that goes on, and I do some other gigs too, but Bernie's got some things coming up. Again, I've got a trip to Bernie with Bernie down to Melbourne, and we'll also be on at Wangaratta, and a couple of gigs in Sydney. And Bernie has a new album coming out, and it's the trio, Lloyd Swanton and Bernie and myself, and Warwick Alder has been the last couple of years has toured. We've done quite a bit of regional touring, and last year we went to Europe and the UK, including the Cork Jazz Festival, the Guinness Cork Jazz Festival. And so that band's going pretty well too. That's got some things happening, and that album will be coming out pretty soon. I'm not exactly sure when.
Any plans to record the Space Cadets?
Well, I would like to record the Space Cadets, but every time we get three or four gigs in a row and things go well, like I've had it down to the Melbourne International Jazz Festival, and I had it over to Adelaide to one of the festivals over there, and then we just get a run and we're just ready to go and record, and then Matthew Ottignon takes off to, you know, on the other side of the world to see what that's like, you know, and gets on a ship. So he's thwarted my plans for it twice now by going away for 6 months and then coming back and writing some wonderful music and then taking off again. And now young Aaron's going over to London to see what happens there. So if I can catch him and put him in a cage for long enough, we will make a recording. We did, the first gig we ever did was on the ABC, and that was live to air. And that
I was there for that one.
You were there for that one? Yeah, that went for an hour, yeah. And that's really the only thing that we've recorded. But if I can catch him and hold him for long enough, those guys, you know, they're all running around enjoying life.
Now, I wanted you to take us back to the origins of the Jazznost Suite, because I know that there is a story behind it, and it comes from the Engine Room, which you were part of.
Well, in 1989, yes, the Engine Room sort of started about a year after 10-part, when I used to do a Monday night at around midnight in the Cross. There was a little club there, and I used to do a regular Monday there with the Bernie McGann Trio, and then Bernie and I think Jonathan Swartz was doing it at the time. I think they went off to Perth with Monica and the Mooches for a week. So the guy said, well, you want to put a trio in? I said, yeah. And he said, who would you put in? I said, I'll put in the Engine Room from 10 Part Invention. And he said, what'll you call it? And I thought for a minute and I said, oh, the Engine Room. And it clicked, and we had a life of our own, and we ended up we backed a lot of famous people and toured with a lot of famous horn players and that. But in 1989, we won a national assessment that was a guy came out from Russia, from the Russian Jazz. What was their full title anyway? Whatever it was, it was the Russian Jazz
Federation, something like that.
Something like that. And Soviet Jazz Federation, that's what it was, because it was still under communism then. And they invited three Australian musicians to go over there. It didn't have to be a rhythm section. Anyway, there was a national assessment of jazz coordinators and judges and what have you. And anyway, we ended up winning that, and off we went to Russia. We went and got all the gear to run around in the snow in and everything like that. And we got to Russia, and we were met by a guy called Georgi Barkchev, who has since passed on, sadly. But he was a wonderful, wonderful comic book character, and he gave us all these instructions, like, you stay this, I go yesterday. And we didn't know what was happening or what, and then he'd say, sorry, my English, sorry, my English. So, you know, Roger said, when I get back to this thing, I'm going to write a piece. And that I think that piece captures, sorry, my English, captures the quirky humour that that Georgi had. And we travelled right across the Soviet Union. We went to, I'll try and say some of the names. You know, we went to Kazan. That's where they have a big festival that goes on for days and nobody goes to bed. That's a great place. And, of course, to Leningrad, as it was then. Chebyshary, went to several other places, and then... So Roger came back and wrote a suite about our travels across Russia. I went back the following year with the Last Straw. So that was a big thrill for me, because that was the year we won the prize for the Leningrad Jazz Festival, and there were some good people, and there were some Americans on there, and there were some good bands from Europe on that thing, but they took a shine to us over there. And for me it was good, because I was going back a year later and everybody sort of knew me, so it felt really good to be there. We had a wonderful time across there, travelling on trains. We refused to fly Aeroflot, and they had us on these overnight trains, so there's a few stories there.
It might have been a good move. John Pochet, good evening.
Thank you, Frank.